Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Welcome to the Songwriter Connection, the podcast that delves deep into the art and heart of songwriting. Each week, we gather around the dining room table to uncover the stories behind the songs. We invite you to join us on a journey to the creative minds of the songwriters who shape the melodies of our lives. From Nashville, Tennessee, here's your host, Dave Lenihan.
We've got great guests today. Oh, and they're already doing the wave around the dining room table. I am your host, Dave. And, you know, normally on this podcast, we get around this dining room table and we play music live. And we talk about songwriting, the craft, and dig in and get under the hood. And talk about the journey and that kind of thing. Today is a little bit different. We're going to talk about the business. And I have my co-host back, Mark Allen Barnett.
I'm here.
Mark Allen Barnett, tours, songwriter, performer. I'll start with you because you've got cuts with, you had a cut your very first day in town.
Shelby Lynn, yeah, that's where it hurts.
And you've had David Ball and
John Barry.
John Barry, who was on this show.
And that's right.
That's, yeah. So you've done a lot. And you're one of the best performers I've ever seen. Just opened for the Atlanta Rhythm Section.
That's right.
In Atlanta?
Or in Rome.
In Rome, Georgia. In Rome, Georgia. I went in Rome.
It was the kickoff for their 54th anniversary tour.
Oh.
Now, 2 years ago, I had a cut on Ides of March.
Remember Ides of March? I remember Ides of March. Your vehicle,
they
right?
were kicking off their 55th anniversary tour. So I've determined that my audience demographic is 82 and up. That's where I am. I fall into it. Now, I was real lucky. It was great. I have lucky. I've had nothing to complain about. I really enjoy it.
You have a special anniversary rate then?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Good. The kind of entertainer this guy is. Yesterday, we were at Bobby's Idol Hour. They do, Janet and Charles do this little get-together on Wednesday afternoons. We drink beer, we play songs up on the stage, and it's not even, we don't even plug in.
It's called a guitar pull.
It's a guitar pull.
It's from the old days of Christopherson and Willie. They would pass the guitar around. Yeah. They called it a pull because you'd have to pull the guitar out of somebody else's hand if you want to play.
Very
it's
good.
It's old Nashville tradition.
So we're all doing well. We're not plugged in, and we're having fun. And then a group of people from a bus comes in, and they were Canadian tourists.
Canadians.
Hey! And, oh, there was no performing while they were there. So we just mingled. But Mark got up there with a guitar. He was up next. And he took his guitar, left the stage, and had them all singing and dancing to Too Much Blood. That's the kind of entertainer he is. He can grab a crowd like that. So anyway, you're here. And a month or so, maybe 2 months ago, you called me out of the blue and you said, man, there's a dude you've got to meet. You've got so much in common. And we had lunch or dinner at McNamara's down
That's
the
right.
street, Irish Pub.
And you introduced,
yes. And you introduced me to our guest today, Bob Bender. Hi, Bob. Good to have you here.
Hey, thanks. It's good to be on the show. And you can call me whatever you want. Bob. I don't care.
Bib? Okay. Yeah. No, I don't want to call you Bib. He's got a tremendous voice, doesn't he?
He does.
He's
very
amazing. He's the host of the Business Side of Music podcast that's everywhere, including YouTube.
You've got it is, absolutely. Yeah.
Very successful podcast. How long have you been doing that?
We started 14 years ago, believe it or not. Tom Sabella, my business partner at the time, did the first 7 years, and then one day he said, I just don't want to do this anymore. And he asked a mutual friend of ours, he goes, you know, but anybody that wants to take over a podcast? And this guy goes, yeah, I think I know this one guy, Bob Bender. And so he calls me up and he said, hey, you want to do this podcast? And I said, sure, what's a podcast? And 7 years later.
There you go.
Yeah, and
you produce podcasts too.
I do. We're also producing a podcast for the country artist Lori Morgan.
Wow, how about
one for her.
And beautiful lady.
And then we do a financial and a music podcast called Two Dudes Talk Money and Music. I have no idea in hell why I'm on that show because I don't know anything about either.
But music and money don't really work together.
No. But yeah, I have a blast producing those. And we're actually taking Lori Morgan show, which is called War Paint with Lori Morgan. We're actually taking that to television starting next month.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
what's it going to be? Where are we going to see?
It's going to be on Harvest Network TV.
Harvest Network.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll be releasing 4 episodes a month, so wow. 1 a week.
1 a week.
And in fact, Saturday night, my lovely bride Debbie and I are going to be, Debbie's of course here in the studio.
Hi, Debbie.
Shooting footage and waving. We're going to be recording some more episodes inside the Grand Ole Opry for Lauren. Wow. We've got 3 guests lined up. And so we're moving out of the studio into the Grand Ole Opry
to do
those. Yeah, the Opry House.
Yeah. Talk about a legacy.
Wow,
of country.
Absolutely.
Her dad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
Was an Opry star. Yeah.
Yeah.
And her, too. So let me tell you a little bit more about Bob. 50 years of successful executive in the music entertainment industry. Bob produced over 300 tours. You were a tour manager.
Yep.
And you worked with folks like Billy Preston. Dwight Tilly, Lisa Twilly. I said Tilly. See, I'm Bob Tilly. Dwight Twilly.
Here's the good news. He's not alive anymore,
he won't care. He won't care. Okay. I'm sorry, ma'am. Lisa and Cult Jam. Rick Derringer, Ohio guy, right? Yeah. Edgar Winter, A Flock of Seagulls. Are they still a flock or is it just...
I think they're a gathering of seagulls these days.
Yeah. Murder of Crows,
yeah,
maybe.
Murder of Crows. Quick, let me get Michael Short on the phone and let him know we're renaming the band.
Okay. Mark Lindsay, heavy metal. This has got to be heavy. If I told you the name of the band was Anvil, what would you say their music genre was?
That's heavy metal.
Okay, so a quick word about Anvil.
Uh-huh.
When I was out with them in 88 and 89, we were playing for like 5 people a night.
Wow.
And it was painful. And they're out of Toronto, Canada. And so we're in the States and just playing for nobody. One of their old roadies, a few years later, turned out to be a filmmaker and produced and directed a documentary film on Anvil, and their success went through the roof. And they wound up opening up for the Scorpions and Def Leppard and AC/DC. And these guys are like 750 years old, and they're still out rocking it every night.
Wow.
They're so old, I can't even go out with them anymore.
Kind of like the Stones, huh?
Yeah.
You also were, we have to also talk, there's more names I need to drop. Gene Pitney, New Kids on the Block, and the Ringo Starr All-Star Tour. The
very first one in 1989,
Who was in his All-Star band?
It was Billy Preston, of course.
Oh, man.
He was musical director.
Yeah.
Joe Walsh.
Oh, man. Yeah. Another Ohio guy. Yeah.
Nils Lofgren from Bruce Springsteen's band. Oh, Clarence Clemens from Bruce Springsteen's band.
Wow.
Dr. John.
Wow.
Was in
whoa.
Can you imagine that show?
And then two of my favorite guys. And I didn't show favoritism, but I just love these guys because they were so, so wacky.
Mm.
Levon Helm and Rick Danko from the band.
Yeah.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
And I'm writing a book, and they're probably going to take up at least 2 chapters.
Oh, man. Man, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, from that, you went into the record industry, right? Curb Records?
Yep, went to work for Curb.
Were you were artist development there?
Yeah, I had no idea what that was either. They just said, hey, we're going to make you manager of artist development. I said, great.
What's that? What's a podcast? This is what I find out about Bob's career. I get the feeling you're a little like me. You can't say no, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, and in spite of my wife saying, say no.
say no.
She's shaking her head. Say no.
Yeah, Patty does the same for me, too. No. Yeah.
So. What are you thinking? Well, the problem is I'm not thinking.
So we're going to talk more about that. And then we have a mastering engineer here, studio owner. We have Steve Creech, who I met through Cindy Alter, who has been in this show. Cindy's a good one. You're producing Cindy's new record. And tell you a bit about Cindy. She was in this international band that's sold like 14 million records called The Cloud out of South Africa and has become a good friend to both of us. And that's how I met you. Steve, good to have you here.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the music industry from a lot of different angles. We've got songwriter, performer, we've got a record exec and a tour manager, and we've got a producer and mastering engineer. I'm going to start with you, Steve. I'm going to ask you a really hard question.
All right.
Okay. Can you explain, in a nutshell, exactly what mastering is? What's the difference? What is it?
Get that every day.
Yeah, I bet you do. And also, he taught at the Ohio State University.
Yeah,
all these Ohio people.
Picky about that, aren't they?
It's got to be D.
I don't know why.
Yeah. Is that the Buckeyes?
Yeah, that's the Buckeyes.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. See, I know something.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you look at it like food, you might fix a really nice steak
mm-hmm.
and have some sides and then or if you go out to a restaurant, you know, you're looking at the ambience of the room. But if somebody brings you really great food on a paper plate, it just doesn't taste the same, and it, you know, you can't savor that.
Yeah.
You can't get into that. So mastering is a finishing process where you kind of put the polish on, and you put, you know, I don't paint the painting, but I frame it. And I'll hang it on the wall and put the right light on it so people can enjoy it from a distance.
Well, here's what I don't get. What's the difference between that and the mix? And just the mix that you get?
It's the Bernays sauce.
It is. It is. The sauce on the side. You know, you can't overcook it. Olive oil will burn.
It's the magic sauce, then, is what you're saying, right?
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Is the caller there?
Somebody's calling me.
Yeah. Oh, my.
Yeah, funny. I don't know if I answered your question, but...
yeah, no, it makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah, you know, of course, most people would say, you know, if they're not savvy about it, they would say, oh, it's just an afterthought. Who needs it?
Right.
But you've never bought a record or a CD or a tape or even a streaming. Everything's mastered. If anything of merit has been mastered by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the old days, mastering was just transferring to make it translate to another medium.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, it's a bit more aggressive. I lived through the loudness wars. You guys did too.
Mm-hmm.
We're loud, 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 make it loud, 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 loud. Gotta, you know, eat, eat, eat.
I remember the old Todd Rundgren albums. This record was made to be played at high volume.
Yeah.
Well, they used to cram so much into the grooves.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Something Anything was a double record.
Yeah.
And it was my favorite Todd Rundgren record, and he did everything himself.
That one in Wizard, my two favorites.
Yeah, did a Stevie Wonder thing.
Yeah.
Could I ask a question while we're on that? Yeah. Do you have to have different techniques for the various applications up to date with all the different digitals, all the different websites? Is there a difference that you're having to do?
Yes.
Or is it still one master for everything?
No, I learn every day. I have to constantly study. I'm like a heart surgeon. I got to constantly stay up on technology. So
I bet.
I have program apps that I run things through. If I had one of your recordings, I'd say, oh, here, I can simulate Spotify. I can simulate Amazon or Apple or any of that sort of things. And I want different things.
Yeah.
And when I started doing it, I'm from Indiana, and so I was doing some Mellencamp things and stuff like that. And they would say, this is the radio mix. You guys remember this?
Right.
This is the radio mix.
Yeah. Radio mix, that's
got
right.
It's got to survive terrestrial radio.
Right.
And then this is our CD mix, you know, and I'd say, well, you know, okay. So, yeah, there are restrictions. Okay. And
Compression.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a compression bandage.
Yep.
I remember always, anytime you would record in the studios, you had always, one of your last things is to play on those little bitty speakers, like it would be in a car radio.
The Orotons.
Yes, yeah. Orotons. Yeah. Okay. And so that was always, you'd listen on the big thing, then the middle, and then those little ones.
Right.
So I would think that the formats have to really be different for those applications.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, whether you're listening to Billie Holiday or... You know, Billy Squire or Billy Preston or...
Any Billy.
Billie Eilish.
Any Billy.
Hillbilly. You know, any Billy's.
Billy Lee, who we had lunch with yesterday.
Yeah. That's cool.
And seriously, I remember just how compressed everything was. Yeah. And I went back to vinyl and I pull on the vinyl records and they sound so much better me.
Yeah.
And different than just pulling it off of Spotify or something. So, over to Bob. Bob, you were tour manager for years, and how did you get into that? And what is a tour manager? Tour manager's like herding cats, right?
Yeah, it literally is. It's like herding kittens.
Yeah.
And there's one of the kittens. Let me go round them up real quick.
Yeah.
It was another one of those moments of, hey, we're looking for a road manager. You want to road manage this band? And I'm like, sure.
What's a
road manager? Literally. And this is before we had the internet.
Yeah.
This is like 1983.
Yeah.
And it was a guy I knew that we'd gone to high school with. And I wasn't actually a road manager. I started out as a stage manager and a guitar tech for the band that was opening the Night Ranger tour. And Night Ranger's playing all these arenas and auditoriums.
Yeah.
And that was a short-lived affair because it turned out I really wasn't a very good stage manager or a guitar tech. But that led to another artist who literally got a phone call from the same manager who managed the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we're looking for a road manager. And I went, cool. Well, what is that?
Yeah.
And he says, well, you just got to take care of these guys and collect the money every night.
Wow.
And that led to about 13, 14 years of being a tour manager and a production manager. And it was baptism by fire at first, but I got through it and I had a fairly successful career.
I would think so.
Because I kept getting called back. That was the thing. These agents didn't know any better. And they'd say, hey, can you go out and do this tour? Can you do that tour?
Right.
And I remember, in fact, the Billy Preston tour. I had come off Dwight Twilley's tour, which lasted about 6 months and a day. And I get a phone call like at 9 o'clock in the morning from Billy Preston's agent, a guy named Shel Safran, the most Jewish bookmaker I ever gonna meet. Okay, you want plaids? I got plaids.
I want the facts. Just give me the facts.
Yeah, and that was Shel Safran. And I found out later on, Shelley, as we call him, Shelley Safran.
Silly. Yeah,
he was a Golden Globes boxer.
Oh, really?
At one time, and he went into the booking agent business. And so he calls me 9 o'clock in the morning, and he goes, I've got this artist, and let me tell you what we're dealing with. We've got some demons on this tour, some things that, you know, the road manager's going to have to take care of. And it's this, and it's this, and it's this. And I said, okay, who's the artist? And he goes, Billy Preston. And I went, you know, I got to do this because it's Billy Preston.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so 9 o'clock in the morning, I said, so when do I start? And he goes, tonight.
Oh.
He goes, I have an airline ticket waiting for you to LAX. You're on a red-eye flight to Atlanta, Georgia, and you pick up the tour tomorrow.
How about that?
And I was with Billy for 3 years.
How about that?
Yeah.
Wow. Do you deal with a lot of different egos? I imagine you do. I'm in the radio industry. I did.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of different egos, and you have to be able to deal with that on a daily basis, don't you?
It's, or lack thereof.
Or lack thereof.
You know, they're 1 minute they have an ego, the next minute they're so insecure.
Isn't that something?
You know, I can't, don't make me go on stage, I can't do this. You're getting on stage because we have to get paid so we can go on to the next city.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're dealing with a lot of different personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes those different personalities are with one artist, and I wish I was kidding, but it's a minefield, I guess is one way to put it, when you go out with these artists. But they look at the road manager as, this is the guy that's going to keep me from falling off a cliff. And
not necessarily falling off the stage.
Yeah, no,
but off the cliff.
Both.
That may have happened once or twice, but I'm not saying. It's such an amazing journey. First of all, working with these artists, and I was with legacy acts, you know.
Yeah.
Now, New Kids on the Block at that time, you know, they were in their prime, and Lisa and the Cold Jam were in their prime. But a lot of these artists that I toured with were really kind of legacy acts. They were past their peak of popularity, but they still went out every night and gave it 150% and just tore it up on stage. Then you have that personal side after they get off. Has my wife called her? Has my girlfriend called her? Both of them called her, you know. And how can we fix this? How can we do that? And, you know, and you, so in addition to being a road manager, tour manager, you become a counselor. Become a marriage therapist. You know, you become all these different things.
A dad, right?
Really. Yeah. And when you joked about herding kittens, literally, if it's a band, you're like, okay, where's the fiddle player? He's in another room. You know, well, we're doing a radio interview right now. I need him here. It was.
Did you organize the radio tours and things too?
I did when I was on for the record label.
Okay,
that was one of my jobs. Yeah. But typically, the bands that I was out with touring, the record labels would set those up, and they'd say, okay, you're doing 4 radio visits a day.
Oh wow!
And you'd start at 6 in the morning, and you'd end like 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And the hardest work ever.
Oh, I'll bet it was. You know, I remember being on the radio side of this, and the radio tours have come through a lot. And I remember one artist, big label artist, who, while she was being interviewed in my studio, after it was done, pulled her into the program director's office and said, hey, I just got called home. They're closing the label. Both of us are out of a job.
Oh, my God.
And holding her while she's crying, you know, my whole career just crashed, you know. And it was so sad. One of the saddest things I've ever had to be witness, you know. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah.
As you're saying that, I'm suddenly, this flashed into my mind. the world's greatest music movie. This is Spinal Tap.
Spinal Tap.
And when they're giving the tour manager, they're giving him, they're going to do Stonehenge.
Right. Yes.
And they get 12 inches instead of 12 feet. Yeah. 12 feet. And they have little dwarves come out. The dwarves would trot on it, you know.
In my defense, we never had Stonehenge and we never had a dwarf.
No. Did you have any Spinal Tap moments?
All the time.
Oh, please.
All the time.
Share.
I mean, I learned rather quickly with one artist, a big, bulky Sharpie, you know, the one's kind of blunt, you know, and just really just smeared on.
Yeah.
We're in this city tonight. It's not Denver. We're in Cheyenne tonight. It's not Boston. We're in Chicago. Right. Yeah, because and it's a melting pot, you know, after absolutely. A while. Yeah. That and, you know, they would get lost from the dressing room to the stage.
There was a door that closed and it locked from the other side. And I could hear the rest of it because I'm the lead singer. I'm just supposed to. I hear the band kicking into it and I can't get the door open. And I'm trying to find another one. And man, they're in their queue. And I'm just imagine the guy stuck in the cocoon, you know. That was me. I'm stuck in the damn
until the song ends, and then it opens.
Rock and roll. Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah.
I just watched yesterday again last week the movie the guy with when he was got hit by a bus and when he woke up nobody knew the Beatles.
Oh my God! Yesterday.
You ever see that movie?
Yeah, yesterday. Yeah.
And there's a scene where his road manager is taking him out to the stage,
right.
And he gives him this big long speech, and he opens the door, and they're not. That's the wrong place.
That's right. That's exactly
right. So I will tell you, and I'm not going to name his name. Mm-hmm. It'll be in the book.
It'll be in the book. And I want to look about your book, too. I'm going to talk about that.
We would play casinos, and it's like a week residency that you do at these casinos.
Yeah.
And this one artist, he loved to party after the show each night. He'd go out, and it was a free-for-all.
At least he waited after the show.
Yeah, right? At least he waited till after the show. Yeah. Except that one night.
Except that
one
night. It's always an exception.
So it's showtime, mm-hmm. and I go to, because we had this artist, he had a valet/bodyguard, and the bodyguard was more to protect the artist from himself than from other people getting to the artist. And so it's like an hour before showtime, and I go, hey, have you seen the artist? And he goes, no, I thought you had seen him. I said, no. So we're now in a panic, because one hour before showtime, and we get a key to go to his room, and he's not there. Didn't look like he'd even slept in it.
Oh,
and we're calling people, hey, have you seen so-and-so? And so now it's showtime. Now with casinos, you start on time. Mm-hmm. If it's a 9 o'clock show, you don't start at 9:01. Mm-hmm. So 9 o'clock, and the band, God bless them, they knew 3 songs that they could do without the artist being on the stage. Kind of a cool, soft jazz, Dave Sanborn type vibe to it.
Okay.
And so I'd look at the drummer, and I'd point my finger, and I go, you got to do that one song. And he goes, okay. In the meantime, the valet bodyguard and myself, we're still trying to find the artist. Well, we find him, and he's in his dressing room, passed out. He never got out of his dressing room from the night before.
No.
So we get him changed real quick, and he's like, pretty much comatose at this point. And then I go back out on the side of the stage and I hold up 2 fingers and I go, you got to do another song. And so they kick into the next song and we finally get the artist up. And I mean, we're literally dragging him. His shoes are leaving scuff marks, you know, on the stage. And I go, man, are you ready? He's I don't know. And so I look at the drummer and I go, third song. And they're looking at me like, we ain't got nothing after this. Right. And so they finish the third song, and then you hear the drum roll, and you hear the artist's name through the master of ceremonies. This guy who's been legally dead in our arms jumps up, goes out on stage, is doing cartwheels and diving off the piano. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I mean, he's just full of energy. And he does his show and just hits it out of the park.
Isn't that something?
And then at the end of the show, he comes off stage and goes back to the dressing room.
That's
amazing. All right, good night. We'll see you tomorrow.
They did that with Hank Sr. He would be at Tootsie's when he's supposed to be on stage, and he'd be comatose. And they'd have to get 2 people on each side to get him to the stage. Oh. And they said when his name was announced, he went out and did his show every time, nailed it, came back, and went right back to being comatose again.
Unbelievable.
You know? And it's weird. Dr. Stage, man, that'll wake you up quick.
Here's a crazy question for you, okay? You see all these crazy items that artists need in their riders in order to perform.
Green M&Ms.
Like the green M&Ms. Did you deal with things like that?
We did. We actually had in one rider, and the reason you put that in there, we wanted a 32-ounce bowl of green M&Ms.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, and Van Halen was famous for that. That's what they did.
Yeah.
It was because a lot of promoters would not read the riders. They would read, okay, you need this much in sound, you need this in lights and staging and production. But when it came to the dressing room, it was like, we'll give them a deli tray and, you know, a loaf of bread and some mayonnaise. And, you know,
there you go.
And you can live on that, but it's not pleasant.
Yeah, that's more than I got.
It's more than what I got. And I was in the dressing room. So
I was going to say, I have a friend who's a rock and roll memorabilia collector, and he... One day I was visiting him, and he hands me this yellow piece of paper. That's something I bet you'd appreciate. And it's a yellow piece of paper, and at the top of it, you know, it says Beatles Rider.
Beatles Rider.
Oh. Yeah. See, they played the State Fair September 3rd, 1964. The only time they ever played a fair was in Indianapolis. I'm from Indianapolis.
Wow.
And so Tom hands me this thing, and it's like two paragraphs. And it says, we would prefer to have some clean towels. If possible, we'd like a television. And could we have a case of water? That's it, basically.
That was it?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we, with this one band I was touring with, we were having, it was problematic. We were having promoters that weren't honoring the writer. And it wasn't six, seven, eight pages of catering. It was just, this is what we want, clean towels. We want a case of water.
Yeah.
If we can get a case of soda and a case of beer and, you know, some food backstage, we're quite content. And we were finding that promoters weren't reading that. So we put in the rider, failure to comply with any of these endorsements in the rider, you will be liable for two tickets to either Disneyland or Disney World.
Ooh,
and you have to donate them to Make-A-Wish Foundation. So now we've got them feeling really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But like we never
yeah.
pulled that shoot. Yeah. But I had one promoter that finally came up to me one night and he goes, you're serious. And I said, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is what we want in our dressing room is there for a reason. We're not trying to nickel and dime you to death. And
that?
It goes, I've never seen somebody ask for two tickets to Disneyland or Disney World. Mm. I said, well, we're not honoring it. But, yeah, just thank you for complying.
That's crazy. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, I want to continue this conversation in just a little bit. I want to talk about the music industry and how it's changed over the years and where you see it going. I've got three amazing guests, Mark Allen Barnett, Bib Pop and Creech, Steve Creech, so don't go away.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to six guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to The Songwriter Connection with Dave Linehan. Find us on Facebook and YouTube at The Songwriter Connection Podcast. And find Dave at thedaveconnection.com. Now back to the show with your host, Dave Linehan.
I was just looking over your bio, Steve Creech, and you did a lot of indie tracks, TV and film projects over the past 30 years. And you worked with people like K-Tel, Disney, Katharine Hepburn, even Phil Keaggy, the great Phil Keaggy.
Yeah. I love Phil Keaggy. He's a really sweet guy. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, well-known as a Christian artist.
Yes.
And one time, I did a record for him in, I think it was 93 or 4, it was called Beyond Nature. And the short story is this. Did the record, I talked to him so long before I came to Nashville, I was still up in the Midwest. And I came down here with Jody, and he was playing in town, and so we went to see him. And she says, go up and say hi to him. Go on. He said, no, he's not going to remember me. So I go up there, and he gives, the guy is such a sweet guy, and he gives me a hug, and he says, oh, hey, man, you know, we're going back to Cleveland, which, you know, Cleveland, to go into the flats, which is, I guess, where the clubs are.
That's where they were, yeah.
And he says, just come with us, you know, it'll be great. Well, I couldn't do that at the time, but about a month or so later, he was playing in a place called Puckett's. And
down
so,
here? Okay.
Yeah, Jody and I go down there, and we're at the door, and a guy's at the big old guy at the door, and he says, you can't just walk in here. This is industry night. You got to have a ticket. I was, oh, I'm sorry. I'm an idiot. I started to leave, and I hear Phil cry out from a distance. He says, hey, that's Creech. That's my producer, man, which is not true. I was his mastering engineer, but he's a sweet guy, and he sits me down up front, and he says, what do you want to hear? And I said, I want to hear a song called Country Down, which was on his record. But I knew it was in tunings, and it was two different guitar parts and etude back and forth.
Yeah.
And he tried, and he did a wonderful job. You know, and the people, a lot of the players in Nashville, like I'm in heaven right now because I'm with three very talented, influential people here in Nashville.
Is that counting yourself?
No.
Where?
No.
Talk
about you guys. Well, you know, Mark has a wonderful reputation for being supportive and educating.
Oh, absolutely.
Business and music. Same thing. What you're doing, Dave, is, you know, is very humbling to me.
Oh,
you know, I try to facilitate and help people with their music. That's why I got into it.
I love that about you, and that's great. Yeah. That's great you do. So about helping music, Mark, you got the tours, and maybe I thought maybe you could talk a little bit about your tours and what you do, and then I want to get back to you, Bummy. I want to talk about artist development and who you had to develop. Go ahead. Tell us, man.
I started at 14 years old back in the rock years of the 70s, you know. And
14?
That's 14. And went through the Southern rock, beginning of Southern rock. And then a band I had in the 80s was kind of like Loverboy Journey, the music of the 80s. And I kind of went through all this. 87, music starts changing on me. And I was in Birmingham, Alabama. And I found out about Nashville and country. And I met someone who had been up here. And so I ended up coming here, changed the format. What was going on in the early days of rock, in my era, suddenly was morphed into country. It was Exile, and it was Alabama. And so that opened up the door for me. And as I've gone on throughout my life, I went as an artist thing. I had some cuts. I've done okay as a writer, and I've been kind of seen it from every angle. It's interesting sitting here with you guys and hearing all the things I've been involved with, things that I have learned from everybody. Well, that's what I do now. I pass this on to other people. I see writers 14 years old, you know, and parents. I do parental counseling. You know, I describe myself as kind of like a sports coach or a golf coach for songwriters and artists. And here are some things that you need to look at. Look at your music. Look at, basically, there's four sections. It's creation of the song, presentation of the song, live and recorded, networking and business, and all of those things. And if I don't know something, I usually know someone who doesn't know something. As a matter of fact, that's why I wanted to get you guys together. And I do my songwriter tours. After years of doing workshops around with NSAI, Nashville Songwriters Association International, and other groups, people want to come to Nashville. Now, an interesting thing about Nashville, as we see the building going on, we're in this growth spurt from hell. And it brings in so many people interested in music. And with the internet exploding as it has put 30 to 60 million writers and artists, content creators in it. So indeed. Now they have to navigate not just Nashville, but the entire universe of technical stuff. You remember all the days of when you would see back in the 50s with Scotty and Bill Black and Elvis, and they got the bass on top of the car, and they're driving all night long. Well, now we're doing the same thing with the internet. We're packing up our stuff, and we're driving down the roads. And so my job is to kind of help people filter out things that are time wasters, because we've all seen that. Shenanigans, people ripping people off. There's a million ways to lose your butt. Yeah, particularly if I'm a parent, and I'm a parent with two kids, and what would I want somebody to tell them? What would I want somebody to do? And the big thing that I would, one of my reasons today is this. relationships. Relationships are every single thing in the world. Absolutely. And every music school and everything don't focus as much on that. So mm-hmm. I do. Mm-hmm. And I try to bring people in, sit them down, look at Nashville from a little broader perspective, and try to explain the motivations of the people who they're dealing with. Because where we are in music today is what I call the world of niching. We're all finding our little niche. We're all going to social media. We're going out there. And a lot of the personalities are getting weighed or getting watered down with AI or getting watered down with all these things. And the relationship and finding your niche is going to be ultimately the only thing that keeps us surviving. And so that is what I try to do. And that's what my tours are. People come in and spend a day or multiple days with me. And that's,
you know, and I preach that all the time, Mark, about on this podcast, that if you're an artist, maybe you're an indie artist, you're a DIY artist, as we're saying, right. is to find your niche.
Yes.
And don't lock yourself into one particular genre. I don't like to even use genre. That's for marketing people, I think.
Right. That's right.
You know, and you look at the real successful ones, artists, they have taken a little bit of all genres and came up with their own thing. And I love artists like, you know, we had an artist on not too long ago, Jesse Kelly Adams. Okay. Bubbly, what a great personality. You ask her what her brand is, and she'll tell you, it's Grit with Grace Country. I'm like,
oh, that's nice.
I love that. That's very cool.
And there's Jamie Harris who does folk and roll. Okay. And there's a lot of artists that do. So find what your niche is, right? Yeah. And as a coach, you help them.
Exactly. Mine was always in-your-face country soul.
Yes.
I had big vocals. I had an R&B flavored voice. As a matter of fact, I was seen by a guy from Warner Brothers just a few months after I moved to town. He says, I love everything about you. I love your music. I love your stage presence. I love everything. I was in Marietta, Georgia 3 weeks ago and assigned a guy just like you. His name's Travis Tritt. And so you have to find out. You have to find these little areas that happen. And then things that happen to you. The music business changes.
Record labels change.
So you got to be able to adjust to all that.
Right.
And so, finding a niche, sometimes the niche will adapt and it'll go someplace you didn't
see. And that's the other thing I say. You're going to evolve as an artist. Exactly. So it could change.
Yeah.
I mean, and then that's okay. Yeah. Well, evolve. Allow yourself to grow.
I was sort of married to a niche one time.
With an N?
Yeah, I can't talk about it. It's legal.
Legally.
We have a long distance relationship. I have to stay 600 feet away at all times. But here's the thing about Bob Ender. And when I first talked to him on the phone, he didn't have this air about him. He was human.
He's a great guy.
And just pretend like he's not here. Right. You can't hear anything.
Yeah, he's like, am I ever going to get to talk?
Yeah, what is that noise? But he's very friendly on the phone, and you know, you wouldn't think I know this guy, you know.
Yeah.
He just seemed really down to earth, and I was just real impressed with Bob's humanity, what he brings to it. I can try to picture you, because you're an easygoing guy, trying to keep a Billy Preston or a Rick Derringer from self-destructing.
Yeah, exactly. My wife says I'm actually very easy, it really easy? I don't remember.
Just not cheap.
Right? Yeah, I'm not cheap. Well, no. My wife will tell you, I'm the cheapest of cheap.
Opens up the wallet and the mouth, flies out, right?
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to mention, Bob, is with us. He is in the Rock Gods Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Tell us about that. What is the Rock Gods Hall of Fame? And what an honor.
Thank you. Trust me, you talk about a humbling experience, Steve. I was inducted with a class back in 2023. I had to think about it. Wow. just a year ago. And I was inducted into a class with Vanilla Fudge.
Wow.
Mike Curb.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Curb.
Steve Popovich. Just these amazing legends in the music industry. So the Rock Gods Hall of Fame is it's a nonprofit, it's a 501c3 organization that is based out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. And their purpose is to recognize and honor those behind the scenes. Now, Vanilla Fudge, you know, I mean, they had a name. You know, they were big for a while. But you don't necessarily think about those guys individually, like Carmine Appice and that caliber of musicians that play on those records or play as sidemen on shows. And so that's the Rock Gods Hall of Fame is really trying to rectify something that hasn't been recognized by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, and don't even get me started on some of those inductees because I don't get them.
Yeah, I don't either.
We're going to do a podcast episode on the business side of music about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, so hopefully, I won't get shot. But it's a great honor, and they do an award show every year. So our award show is going to be February 16th in Chicago. We just did one in Cleveland, Illinois in March. Michael Stanley Band and the James Gang great artists. Bo Coop, that a lot of people may have not heard of, but made an impression.
Yeah.
And so, and these awards that you get are amazing. It's a platinum record with your name on it, Rock Gods Hall of Fame.
Cool.
My wife, Debbie, you know, she goes in the living room and there's all these awards on the wall. And she goes, that's the only one I want. And I get it, because that's how I felt, too. You know, when you work for a record label.
What an honor.
You get recognized for being a part of a song or an album. Yeah, the team. Mm-hmm. And so you get those gold or platinum albums, you know, and it's very cool. Trust me.
It's very cool. Yeah,
I'm not complaining.
Cool. Yeah.
But when you get something from the Rock Gods Hall of Fame, it's a totally different vibe. And yeah, I was honored. You can go to Rock Gods. It's ROCKGODZ. Okay. HallOfFame.com, RockGodsHallOfFame.com. And you can look at the inductees. They've been doing this since 2009.
How about that?
So, yeah.
I want to talk about, you were inducted with Mike Curb, right?
Right.
And you worked for Curb Records.
I worked for Mike, yeah.
So you worked for Mike
for
directly.
For the label, yeah.
Yeah. Artist development, A&R, is there a difference?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a big difference. So A&R, and Steve can probably touch on this a little bit, it's more about the process of putting the record together, finding the right songs, making sure this is something fits.
Yeah.
That whole school of thought. Manager of artist development is to take the artist or the act and develop them. A lot of, and Mark will tell you this, a lot of artists will come and get a record deal, and they don't know the first thing about stage presence. They don't know the first thing about meet and greets, or as we call them, grip and grins. what it takes to do a radio promotions tour. Because A&R doesn't handle any of that.
Yeah.
This is what Manager of Artist Development does. And sadly, the record labels have eliminated that position.
Are you kidding?
It no longer exists with... I've got a good buddy of mine, Larry Butler. It was funny. We kind of went up through the ranks at the same time. He was at Warner Brothers while I was at Curb. Mm-hmm. And he was Manager of Artist Development. And we talk about that every once in a while, about it's the one component, it's the one piece of the puzzle that record labels need to have, but they've eliminated because it's not cost-effective. And what record labels do now, and I think A&R has a part of this, is to look and see how many likes you have, how many hits do you have, how many downloads do you have.
Yeah,
and that's how they pick the artists. And that means nothing. You
used to have to go out and watch them, right? You go and scout them.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Well, you mentioned Steve Popovich, and I used to do mastering inadvertently for Cleveland International.
Yeah.
Which is, he was associated with that.
Yes, he was.
And
interesting story, by the way.
Did he start it? I don't know.
Did he start
that, Bob?
Yeah.
That I don't know.
Anyway, one of his artists, I was producing a record, and he'd sent a guy over from Columbus or someplace in Ohio who just showed up at the studio and said, okay, play me everything you got. And I said, I'm not prepared to do that. I should have been notified. You're impeding upon the creativity of my guys. I work for the company, but I'm a freelancer, whatever you call that. I wasn't with the label. But they served to protect the artist, like what you did on the road. You protect them from themselves,
right?
So they can do their job.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And I imagine today they could hire consultants to do that, huh?
Well,
it's an important part. It really is.
But Mark brought up something that I think we have to understand. There's a lot of consultants out there, and quite a few of them are bottom feeders.
Yep.
And it's what I call, they'll be more than glad to take your parents' 401k
sure.
money.
That's right. Absolutely.
Know, they'll be more than willing to do that. So finding that right consultant, mm-hmm. you have to do your research. You've really got to investigate.
Yeah.
And I know a couple people, Mark's one of them, mm-hmm. Larry Butler, who I mentioned, who I would recommend as consultants because they get it and they're not going to rip you off.
And have done it.
And it's a justified expense.
Yeah.
But it's something that a lot of artists, you know, they come to Nashville or they go to Austin or they go to LA or New York or Chicago and they don't factor in that component. Oh, I'll get a record deal and I'll be taken care of. No, you won't. Because guess what? The record company owns everything that you
do.
That's right. Yeah. So your money, you know, it used to be you went out and you cut an album and you went on the road to tour to promote the album.
Right.
Now you go out, you cut an album to promote the tour.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the roles have reversed.
And that has changed primarily because there's no more mechanical, they're not getting paid. People aren't buying records, right?
Yeah, you know. Now the good news is vinyl is making
coming back
is making a resurrection, which I'm so a resurgence. I'm
me
so glad to see that.
Me too.
But yeah, they're not buying the product like they used to. Streaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just had a guest on the Business Side of Music a couple of weeks ago. We talk about the effectiveness of streaming. And she said that, and she's the COO of Deezer, which is one of the largest streaming services in the world, are based out of Paris, France. Mm-hmm. And she said that they get around 200,000 or more streams a day put on Deezer. Okay. And at one point, they went back and looked and they said, we have such a heavy catalog, not such a deep catalog, but we have such a heavy catalog of music that's getting zero plays and we have to do something. So they went in and it was several million. They said at the end of the year, you're gone, you know, because you may have gotten one stream in a year. They were removing things from playlists like washing machine sounds, you know, just the most absurd things you can think of. People just trying to make a 15 second, you know, claim of fame. It's no longer 15 minutes, it's 15 seconds.
15 seconds of fame.
Andy Warhol was right.
Yeah.
So you missed it by 14
minutes. 14 minutes and 45 seconds.
Yeah.
It's a whole different geography that we have to traverse these days. And I think because the manager of artist development is no longer there, they and our person is still there to a certain extent, although I don't think they carry the weight or the impact they used to, because once again, it's left up to what is on the internet, and that's how you determine who's successful. Now, there's exceptions to the rule. I think Taylor Swift is a huge exception to the rule.
Yeah.
I think George Strait, you know, I just read where he just set a new 110,000 people.
There's almost 111,000
in a stadium.
Yeah. And it's more than some towns.
Yeah. And they said it wasn't fancy lights or dancers or sets and scenery. It's just this guy going on stage, holding a guitar, not even really playing it.
Right.
And had a great band of musicians.
But he was wearing a dress, though.
Wasn't no.
Yes.
He don't dance.
I want you to say that in front of George.
Yeah, me too.
There's a guy that lives a couple miles from me, from the studio. Mm-hmm. His name's Marty, and he's written songs that George recorded. He's got two cuts on this new album.
Good.
And he's an early riser. And so at 5 o'clock, this is true, this is like less than a week ago, about 5 o'clock in the morning, I had my phone by the bed, and he goes, I go, oh, no, what is this? Look at it. He sent me a video of George Strait doing his song called To the Moon. And I'm going to dedicate this here song to my wife, I think her name's Norma, for 52 years. And it was really sweet. But yeah, and it's still people still buy George Strait as a brand.
Oh, yeah. There is that exception
he's
to the rule. There really is.
Yeah.
And I think bands that go out and tour today make a huge mistake if they don't have CDs or vinyl in their merchandise. I think they're missing out on, you know, every penny counts anymore.
Yeah.
And if you can't afford getting vinyl pressed, because vinyl can get expensive, then do CDs.
Yeah.
If you can't do CDs,
this is mine. This is the last damn CD I'll ever do. This right is here.
It's coming out.
You would rather
Which one is you?
This is the
I see a dog and I see a guy
and a dog. Yeah.
This is volume one.
There's a lot of what's the pointism going on. Ooh. You know, we look at things and go, "What's the point of it?" And CDs, I am doing one. I do limited stuff. I'm teaching. My thing is more in education. I'm pushing more to educate. But you run into places and you never know where they're going to end up. You never know when somebody. People still like to have mementos of the evening.
I agree.
And I play the Frank Brown Songwriters Festival down in Florida. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. You'll have. We always want to have something that people can take home.
I always do.
I got a picture with my dog, so it'll get the dog lover. But, you're right. They do make a big mistake on that.
What other advice can you give to young artists, indie artists that are trying to make their way? One of the points that you made before we went on the air is, so 1% are going to be you're talking about the very successful artists.
Right, right.
But there are a lot of ways to be successful. And I always talk about defining your own success. So maybe you can expand on that a little.
First of all, there's never going to be another Taylor Swift, in our lifetime.
No,
you know, we're not going to see that. I think the mindset of, you know, well, I want to be successful so I can have a private plane and 20 tour buses and, you know, 50 semis. Yeah. That's a mindset you need to get rid of right off the bat. I think you've got to determine. What is realistic success?
Right.
And realistic success might be that you can go out. And I know a husband and wife duo who have a Sprinter van who go out and tour. They're called Gold Pine.
I know them. I love them.
I do too.
They've been on the show a couple times.
Yeah. And they go out and they tour in their van. And on their days off, they'll play golf. You know, they have fun. And they'll sell CDs. To them, I don't know how much money they make a year. But they're not playing big venues. They're playing small clubs or coffee houses or maybe couch parties, living room parties.
Dinner parties?
And what?
House concerts.
House concerts. Yeah, I'm sorry.
They played the City Winery not too long ago.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah.
And I think that can be success in your own mind if you can make a living. And I think that's the most important thing.
And they're seeing the country and they're driving and they're... You know, they just seem very, very happy.
And you have tens of thousands of fans. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the mindset. Is why are you doing this? Well, you're doing it because you love what you do. You love creating music and getting it out there. And then you want to share it with everybody. And that's why you go out on the road and tour. And I think, you know, whether you need to make $35,000 a year or $50,000 a year or whatever that $100,000 a year, and those are all reachable and sustainable. But here's the number one rule I tell everybody, and I had a buddy of mine who moved to Nashville a few years ago, and he gave it about 18 months and he left. Mm. And I said, Nashville is at least a 5-year town, if not a 10-year town.
Yeah.
Well, what does that mean? Well, that means you come to this town and you put in 100% effort for the time that you're here. And we talked about this before the show. It's not what can people do for me. It's what can I do for others. And that's building relationships, and it's networking and being on those songwriter nights that you guys host and perform at. And it's getting to know people like Steve Creech or Mark or Dave. And I think that you start building that database. You start building that network. And it's not going to happen overnight, but 3, 5, 7, 10 years down the road, if you stay at it,
you never know.
You never know.
You just never know.
Yeah.
I had a couple of parents last week and a 14-year-old girl. And I asked the 14-year-old girl, what's your goal? I said, I want to play in front of 100,000 people and everybody will love my music. And I said, well, start for the first 10.
Yeah.
You know?
And not 10,000, but first 10,000.
10. Yeah. First 10 people. And the next time you play, make sure it's 20 people. And then people lose sight of that. And they come here.
Yeah.
You know, I always hear this. Why don't the clubs promote more? Well, the clubs promote, but they got shows. shows every night. It's your job to get people in you're doing.
Right.
Well, can I ask you guys, this is Brain Trust, can I ask you guys a question here? Because I don't know how to say it. There's, we only have, we're finite lifespans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we want to be as productive as possible, whether you're 14 or whether you're 60 or whatever. So some of the philosophies that I've been trying to apply to this phase of my career anyway is to say, for instance, profit is what you don't spend. So your resources, you know.
Right.
If your resources is songwriting, which is your focus, Dave, mm-hmm. which you do one, by the way, or Mark is an exceptional songwriter, or Bob here, people skills. But the I keep coming back to this humanity thing about,
Amen.
You know, what's that little thing they say? If you have a penny and you double it every day for a month, right. you can get a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you're talking about. It's start slow
exactly.
and build.
Yeah.
You know, and the patience. And then I was talking, I think you and I were talking, Dave, about something I found disturbing about people who want to be celebrities. Mm-hmm. And I think of the word celebrities because you celebrate. We're here today. We're here to celebrate Bob and his career. But you celebrate them. You know, and you honor them, and you respect them. And again, it comes back to the humanity of music or the humanity of whatever effort it is. So if I had a kid nowadays, I would take him to Bob or somebody like Mark or yourself who I know has paid their dues, and they're going to be conservative and being critical. But anyway, you guys got me thinking about all these deep thoughts. You know,
deep thoughts.
Well, I want to jump back. You know, we've almost come full cycle from the 1980s. You know, I lived in Southern California, and you had the Whiskey a Go Go, and you had the Roxy, and you had Gazzari's,
the Troubadour.
You had all these clubs. Well, how did you get into them? Well, a lot of it was pay to play back then.
Yep.
You would be given 100 tickets or 50 tickets or whatever it was, and they were $5 a piece or $10 a piece, whatever it is. And it was your job to sell those tickets, and that's how you got on the stage that night. And there might be four or five bands playing on that same stage that night. You had to go out and promote yourself. Now, Van Halen is the perfect example. As is Poison, as is Rat, as is Motley Crue, all these rock and roll bands and hair bands, you would go up and down the Sunset Strip and Hollywood Boulevard in L.A., and on every telephone pole or light pole would be, tonight at the Whiskey a Go-Go, it's Motley Crue. Tomorrow night, it's Van Halen at the Roxy. And they're promoting the hell out of themselves like crazy and going around going, hey, will you buy it? You know, buy a ticket for me, $5 or $10, and you never know. And that's part of that building a relationship and building a network and building a fan base that doesn't happen overnight.
That's right.
And there were a lot of bands that did that didn't make it.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a reality check there, too.
Well, do the legwork. Do your homework. And, you know, I know one young artist, she has a notebook. And so anybody that she meets new, can I get your name? And it's for my mailing address. And so she's got she's built a big network of folks that she can send her little newsletters out every month. And I love that.
That's what Taylor did. I mean,
that's exactly what that's what I was
is
saying.
Is that what she did?
Yes, exactly. She had she and her mother would go do shopping malls. Remember the old Tiffany?
Yeah.
That would do those. Right. You know, there's always in shopping malls, there's either a stage or something in the middle, and they would sit up and do those all the time. Justin Bieber's mother would rent a storefront, and he would go do radio interviews and then do a show, and they'd bring all these people in. So even at the beginning, and they're at the beginning of the technology and internet, it was still about meeting people. And she had 250,000 people who were fans of hers before her record deal. She already had so much stuff going on. And she was very, very good. I met her at 15, and she was very, very good. But, you know, that's what it takes. We're also politicians.
Yeah.
Vote for me. Vote for my songs. Come out and see me. That's exactly what we have to do.
Absolutely. Bob, where do you see it going here?
I think we're seeing a drastic change that I don't believe any of us really know yet. Right. And a lot of that has to do with AI, artificial intelligence. And that's a completely different separate podcast
episode. Mm-hmm.
I think that is uncharted water that the music industry and the artists And I separate those two because the music industry is the corporate conglomerate, yeah. and the artist is that individual who's trying to create something. I think if we allow AI to take over, we're going to have 12,500 Bruce Springsteen releases on YouTube and TikTok, and it's not going to be Bruce. They've just artificially created his voice, and that's a very scary thing.
It is.
But I think the other reality is these artists have got to get out. These songwriters have got to get out. And what I've been saying earlier, wash, rinse, and repeat. You've got to get out and network. You've got to get out and perform. I don't care if you play nothing but coffee houses and there's 25 people in the audience, what Mark brought up. Mm-hmm. Get their names on a mailing list. Talk them into buying a CD because it is right. Political. Yeah. You're a salesman is what
you are. You are.
And I think we're getting back to that. I think we're getting back to what we saw in the 70s and the 80s and in the early 90s. I worked on Music Row for 7 years, and Music Row, and I hear people say it all the time, yeah, Nashville's not what it used to be. No, it's not. And it never will be again.
What is, though? You know?
Yeah, what yeah. is? Because yeah. what was on Music Row is now in about 12 different parts of Nashville.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the reality. So and we're never going to get that Music Row that we used to have. Hollywood isn't what it used to be. How many major mm-hmm. motion picture studios do we have left?
Yeah.
You know, New York, Broadway, those, you know, Austin, Texas, and Chicago are burgeoning markets. Paris, France, I think, is a burgeoning market. I think Berlin, Germany is a burgeoning market. But it's very grassroots, and I think that's where I think the future is. Is it's going to have to be a grassroots mentality and build from there.
Isn't that something?
Amen.
Very yeah, good. I agree.
There you go. Mark, I've heard that already AI is in the songwriting rooms.
They are. There's a couple of very disturbing trends to me. AI, people are saying they give a prompt and the song is written in 5 minutes. And,
yeah.
and they're actually getting pretty good. The other thing is I'm having an even bigger kind of struggle with, and that is what is now called interloper lyrics, and that is where they're
what
taking
is that
okay they're taking an existing song, and there's one on the radio right now, and it's I mean, there's always been parodies,
right?
You know, it's always been Weird Al built an entire thing.
I think
but
I know
these
going.
Are legitimate artists, and I'll just say it, Dustin Lynch and Jelly Roll, they took the song Drift Away.
I just
literally note for note rewrote their own
lyrics
called Chevrolet.
Yeah.
And to me, I just it just is insane to me.
Me too.
And there are three writers on that song, and I think they ought to know better. I mean, yeah. how many Lennon and McCartney and Joe Blow songs are going to be coming out?
Yeah.
How many Elton John, Bernie Taupin, and Jack Smith songs are going to be coming? I mean, do we now just rewrite everything? It just sends shivers. As bad as the AI is, it's just
and
killing.
It's so different from like is it Chris James who did. He did the rebel riff.
Yeah, he's doing.
But then
that.
He wrote a whole new song.
Right, that's the same thing.
So, what I see the difference is he didn't take the whole song.
Right, right.
You know, they took the whole
song, took the whole thing,
and rewrote it. It's like, come on, why would you? We have a great classic
that's
song there.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Why would you do? You're not going to write it better. I don't care. You're not. You know.
Yeah. A few years ago, Kid Rock came out with a song doing Sweet Home Alabama all summer long. Now, what he did before he released that, as he was formulating how he did that, he got with the writers of Sweet Home Alabama and Warren Zevon, the family of them, and worked that out and included them as writers on the song.
See,
and they actually played. On the song.
I didn't
and know that. And so I can and it was an homage to Sweet Home. It was
see,
about that
I agree
song.
With the homage. Yeah. There you go.
That I can understand.
That
but
I
just
can.
Completely taking a song, and I'm not talking about a little piece here and there. Like
no.
Rebel Road.
It was
the whole song.
The whole song.
And that just to me, I just can't wrap my head around it. And then AI on the cusp of that, it's like, I mean, where is our creativity going?
Yeah.
Where's our humanity going? That's a great word.
Yeah.
Humanity is just, that's what I'm worried about.
Well, you know, Bob mentioned he worked with Dwight Twilley, and I was a fan of Dwight Twilley's. And I remember playing it for my brother. He says, oh, it's Buddy Holly. I go, no, it's Dwight Twilley.
Right.
He was from Texas, right?
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma
boy, yeah.
Yeah.
Tulsa.
power pop stuff. Loved mm-hmm. it. Good yeah. stuff. As, you know, before there was a Green Day or any of that.
Yeah.
Or a Weezer.
Yeah.
There was Dwight and Phil Seymour, his buddy.
That's right, yeah.
Those would have been interesting conversations. But, you know, there's what, like you're talking about, being derivative or just flat out stealing
yes.
something.
Yeah.
You yeah. know, we all kind of you, stand on the giant.
Everything is an homage to something. There's pieces of everything and everything that all of us ever do. Yeah. But we give credit. We give props to that. Yeah. This is absolutely. This is, to me, something yeah. very, very different.
I think if we're not careful, we're going to suck the creative process
Amen.
Out of our lives.
Amen.
And that is a sad commentary on life and society if that happens. Mm. I still listen to records that were released 50 years ago.
Me yes. too.
And I almost always hear something new when I play it. I go,
Me too.
I didn't realize that conga was there or that guitar lick. I've never really heard it that way before.
Yeah.
Or, man, that note he hits.
Yeah.
And if we don't, if we don't keep the creative process in that dynamic of creating, then we might as well just hang it up and let the computers do everything.
I think that's where we leave it today. And I want to thank you, Bob, for your insights and everything you've done.
Thank you for having me on the show. This has been a great pleasure. Thank you.
I hope we can do it again. Steve Creech, thank you, brother.
Thank you.
It's really good to get to know you as of late.
Yeah.
And best success with that Cindy Alter record you're doing. I can't wait to hear it, actually.
I brought you a CD.
And I hope we didn't discourage you at all. We want you to do it for the love of it, because it sure ain't for the bucks,
sure
as a writer who said recently. But you can find success, like Gold Pine, like Bob That's was right. saying. So after all, what do you always say, Mark? Mark Allen Barnett.
You don't choose music. Music chooses you.
That's our show for today. Thank you so much for joining us on Songwriter Connection.
We hope you enjoyed this intimate glimpse into the world of songwriting and found inspiration in the stories shared by our talented guests. Remember, the magic of music lies not only in the notes and chords, but in the emotions and experiences woven into every lyric. Until next time, keep listening. Keep creating and keep the melodies alive.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.